Sundays are for causing havoc on Twitter, LOL.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. Today we're going to be looking back at Sunday's nine games. We're going to preview the week ahead for those of you listening to this as the audio form. On video, you can see a separate video for week 22. And then, of course, previewing DFS for Monday, where there are six games. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Indeed, we've got quite a bit to talk about in today's show, so let's get straight into the
monstrous line of the night.
Of course, we always, it's not James Harden today for once. We always like looking at these ones. And the monstrous line from Sunday is Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns in the big victory over the Warriors on the road. 41 minutes for Booker, 37 points with 8 rebounds, 11 assists, 2 steals, and 2 triples. 57% from the field, 9 of 9 from the line. I've talked about Booker quite a bit, saying his best position is at point guard. They utilize him at point guard a decent amount in this game, but it's getting those steals up. If you can get those steals high, he will be a consistent top 10 fantasy player. So strong performance here from Booker, who is the 11th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, top 20 over the last month. 24th over the course of this season, and I think will be a very, very solid top 20 and potentially borderline first-round draft pick for next season. So he's your monstrous line of the night for Sunday.
Waiver wire line of the night.
The waiver wire line of the night goes to another shooting guard, Damo Dotson of the New York Knicks, who's available in 83% of leagues. 41 minutes for Dotto in his Knicks loss to the Timberwolves, 26-6-6. 4 triples and 2 steals, shot 53% from the field and hit both of his free throws. We know that Dotson has been up and down with his minutes, but to be fair, to old Professor Data, Dotson's minutes have been relatively consistent. Over the last little bit of time, he has played over the last 6 games, 29, 29, 30, 34, 33, and 41 minutes. Of course, the one game before that, first in that 6-game stretch, he played 17 minutes. It's his consistency in shooting that needs to get better now. The last 3 games, 50%, 17%, and then 53%. The big surprise, I guess, here of what Dotson done in that in this 6 games are his assist totals. 6-0, 3-5, 3-6, so adding that to his game. Previously, he'd been more just of a scorer and a 3-point streamer, but he is starting to add some value here. But even in this big bump of minutes where he's playing 30 a game over the last 2 weeks, he's still not a top 150 player because of that waning or varying field goal percentage, 39% over those 7 games. But I think he's an okay stream guy for 12-team formats. But the Knicks play once this week on Tuesday, and then they don't play again until Friday, and then again on Sunday. So you're not getting maximal value out of Dotson. So if you're going to scramble to get him, his spot will be better used as a streaming spot when talking about utilizing the back-to-backs during this week rather than must hold it as a player. I think for 14-team leagues, he is a must-hold or must-roster player. But for 12s, his spot is likely better off being used as a streaming spot. The deep leaguer of the night is Kader Bates-Diop of the Minnesota Timberwolves. His second consecutive start for Andy Wiggins. 35 minutes in this one for Bates-Diop. 18 points with 2 triples, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. So that is, of course, a Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
He shot the ball well as well, 58% from the field. A guy that I decently liked coming out of college. His steals and block numbers and rebound rate looked really, really good as a fantasy translation. Has barely gotten an opportunity. In fact, Tom Thibodeau was 100% allergic to playing him, I believe. In the Thibodeau era, he played a total of 17 minutes across 2 games. Hasn't been that much better with Ryan Saunders, but he's been a regular part of the rotation over the last 6 games with Luol Deng out, Bob Covington struggling, and now Wiggins out. I don't think that Deng is going to take Bates-Diop's minutes. Wiggins and Covington, of course, if and when they come back, Wiggins more likely than Covington. is going to have an impact on him, but he's a name to really watch long-term for Dynasty Leagues. That steal, block, rebound rate, and the ability he's showing to score at the moment could translate legitimately into multiple top 70 seasons. It would probably take a little bit of time to get there. For now, he's like a 16-team stream guy. Shit, he's a if we know Wiggins is going to miss more games, he can be a 12-team streamer. The Wolves don't play on Tuesday, but Monday, but they do play Tuesday and they do play Thursday. Remember, this whole week is a streaming week. Every single day you can stream players in, given the way that the schedule is played out. But you might, you're adding him to hold on for Tuesday when you could be getting maximal value by adding someone on that Monday. He's probably in a similar boat to how we look at Dotson. But for deeper formats, it's strong for him. It's just that I'm not sure how the role actually sits as he moves forward with the return of Wiggins going to likely limit Bates Diop as we move forward.
Young gun of the night.
The young gun of the night is Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks. 37 minutes for Doncic in this one, 19, 15, and 9. He had two steals and two blocks, only 5 of 16 from the field, but got to the line 9 times and hit 8 of those. That's what we want to see, the big free throw rate and the big free throw percentage. Something, not the rate, the percentage, which has been lacking for Doncic this season. We just want him to get back to that European number that he was shooting, which was 80%. He did hurt his knee at one point in this game, returned. He said, the people were saying that maybe he said it popped. I don't know about that. We heard the same thing from Karl Anthony Towns yesterday. He said it was fine though, so hopefully nothing to worry about too much. But any signs of any issue with Doncic, the Mavericks have absolutely zero to play for. So limited games could be coming for him. Over the last 2 weeks, he's a top 30 player. Imagine that he will be that guy for many, many seasons to come. And the only thing holding him back this year, realistically, is the percentages. Otherwise, he would already be that guy as a top 30 guy. At the way things stand at the moment, he is barely outside the top 50 on the back of those poor percentages. And remember, percentages are such a double or triple impact thing, as they impact your points, your threes, and it has multiple impacts there. So both those percentages can have really big impacts. And when they're down or when they rise, it has multiple positive impacts. And I think that's what we'll see from Doncic when those numbers come in the coming years. The dud of the night is Malcolm Brogdon of the Milwaukee Bucks. A bad loss for the Bucks as they lose to the Spurs. Brogdon only the 23 minutes, 5 points with one rebound and two assists. He can obviously be better than that. We hope that he will be. Not the greatest of performances from old Brogo in this one. But prior to that, he's had a really strong season. We know that he's been putting up really consistent numbers and getting a lot of minutes, the 70th ranked player this year. But over the last month, he has slid outside the top 100 because his assist rate has dropped down, his rebounds have tailed off a bit, and his steals. And it doesn't seem like much, but you go from 0.7 steals to 0.5 steals, and it can be a decent enough impact to drop you 10 or so spots in ranking numbers. And that's exactly sort of what's happened to Brogdon. But he's still a must-hold player. The poor shooting here is nothing to be worried about. His shooting is one of the key strengths of him, shooting 51, 43, and 93 for the season. So massive percentages for Brogo over the course of this season. The plus-minus goats of the day, PJ Tucker had the best net rating, plus 132, and Troy Daniels with the worst net rating, negative 112.1. Tucker continues to be an excellent basketball player, but a terrible fantasy option. He really is just a stream guy for steals, and I have zero idea why Troy Daniels is getting literally any minutes at all at this point. Let's look at some injury news. The Wizard Omari Spellman for the Hawks has been ruled out for the season with his ankle injury. Alex Poitras, you think he's going to miss some time. So that does open up some minutes for Alex Len. Recently signed Tyler Zeller. If you're in 1,000 team leagues, maybe Zeller might be someone to have a look at there. But it does help Len and Dedmon and, of course, John the Baptist Collins. But the big injury news of shutting down for the season comes from LA. Lonzo Ball out for the rest of the year. When he did that grade 3 ankle sprain, the 6-week timeline seemed absolutely ridiculous, and I believe I mentioned that at the time on the podcast, that it seemed unlikely, then suffering a bone bruise, and he won't return for the rest of the season, according to Shams. The Lakers' official report is he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. That's bullshit. He is not going to play. Brandon Ingram also out for the season with a DVT, a deep venous thrombosis, which of course is extremely dangerous. We know that the blood clots and thromboses derailed Chris Bosh's career. Not saying it's going to impact Brandon Ingram, but it is something they really need to be careful that anything dislodges and moves to your heart and your stroke. Not only can't you play basketball anymore, but you can no longer go on living, and that's something they have to be extra cautious of. So, of course, he has done that. Opens up a ton of opportunities there in LA. You're going to get Alex Caruso for deeper leagues. Rajon Rondo's minutes are going to stay high for the rest of the season. You're going to get Josh the Hitman Hart, who honestly looks terrible. He's dealing with his knee issue, which is clearly impacting him, and I'm not sure he's a must-roster guy. KCP started last game. He was atrocious. You're going to get weird performances from Lance Stephenson, and then in the front court you had a big game from Flaming Mo Wagner last time. I think that was more to do with the absence of the future MVP Kyle Kuzma, but they could go with Wagner in there at power forward and LeBron in there at small forward as well, replacing Ingram in that starting lineup. So Reggie Bullock struggling. I don't really see a clear ad. You could take a flyer on Wagner in, say, 14-teamers. Josh Hart's a 14-team guy. Rondo's a clear 12-team player, but it's going to be lots of chopping and changing for this Lakers team. You'll get guys like Jonathan Williams come in at times. But a lot of that, again, the big Williams and big Wagner games from the weekend were a factor, or were due more to Kuzma's absence rather than Ingram. When he comes back, he takes his 32-33, and those guys are going to lose out. I mentioned earlier Karl Anthony Towns and his knee. I thought that for sure we're going to be seeing multi-week absence from Towns, but at this point he was questionable for Sunday's action. He didn't end up playing. I expect a couple of games missed here, but no guarantee at all. Taj Gibson moved into the starting lineup, and he's the 12-team ad there. Anthony Tolliver and Gorgui Dieng become deeper league players. And Dario Saric continues to be an absolute stinker. And if I was the Wolves, I'd be playing Bates Diop there. Realistically, they probably won't, but I would want to see Kata Bates Diop as the starting power forward playing 30 minutes a night, then whatever bullshit we're getting out of Saric here in 21 minutes. Andy Wiggins with the quad has missed the last couple. You're in the playoffs now. You don't know if he's going to be back. He's piss poor anyway, so he is a pretty clear drop to me in 10-teamers and probably in 12-team leagues. While Frank Ntilikina, nobody is rostering him in redraft leagues, but he will be out for the three-game road trip. For the Knicks, maybe there's a chance he doesn't play again this season. I'd say there's a 99% chance the Knicks are done with him in general, and he will not be on this squad next season. They have no interest in developing him at all, it appears, and I see him on another team, maybe with some steals, assists, upside. If the offense comes around to any degree, maybe he could be a Patrick Beverley type fantasy guy, but we're a fair way off that at this stage. The other injury is Jimmy Butler sat out the final 4 minutes of the Sixers game today with a foot issue. We don't know the severity of that, but of course that's something we'll want to watch, and that could give some stream value to Jim Ennis in deeper leagues, while Kevin Durant hurt his ankle at the end of the Warriors' loss. And the Warriors only have two games for this week. There's a chance Durant doesn't play in one of those, and that means that he's not going to be a weekly lineup block guy, but he's also got plenty of time to rest this ankle. So I imagine, I think they play Wednesday. He won't play that Wednesday game, but everything looks okay. It's not a severe injury, and he won't miss much time. But for this week, where they only had two games, I think it could actually get knocked down to just the one game for Kevin Durant and his ankle. Let's get into these games now, break them down, the action from Sunday, talk about the fantasy value that we should be looking to extract from these performances. The first game we look at, the real early game, was the Chicago Bulls getting trounced by the Detroit Pistons, as the Pistons continue to be one of the form teams across the NBA, as weird as that is to say. Given unexciting they have been over big stretches of the season, but they're really putting in some big performances at the moment, the Pistons. On the Bulls side of things, it's really hard to get a full gauge on how things look because of the blowout. Chris Dunn continues to be an absolute disaster, and I'll continue to tell you this. If you can get any sort of top 100 value back for him in a dynasty, you snap it up, because he is not a starting caliber NBA player. Otto Porter had 17-6, as did Lauri Markkanen, while Zach LaVine sat this one out. That gave Wayne Seldon more minutes, 18 minutes for Seldo in his 28 minutes, while Ryan Arcicjacono started in place of LaVine, didn't do a huge amount, and we got Big Shaq Harrison.
Big Shaq!
He played 32 minutes, had 11, 2, and 7, but his value, of course, is going to dip pretty significantly. Seldon's an interesting guy to me, but of course, when LaVine's back, and then in a couple of weeks when Hutchison's back, if he even returns, his value is going to slide. For the Pistons, Reggie Jackson, only the 25 minutes. Some of that is blowout related, but prior to this, his minutes had been on the way down. 21 points with 6 assists, while Griffin had 28, 6, and 5. And good old Langston Galloway, he hit 6 triples. He had 21 points, and he played 29 minutes. He's just as likely to shit the bed in the next game. It was also the extra minutes for him with a blowout and the fact that the Shark, Bruce Brown, was sitting out of this game. Baby Shark, Brown will be back for Monday. The Duck, Luke Kennard, had 9-9 in 31 minutes. The minutes continue to be strong. His production, while not great here, was still okay. I think he's probably okay as a 12-team league guy. While Drummond had 16-15, and Glenn Robinson, the little dog, he started in place of Brown, played 13 minutes, and continues to be a really, really large disappointment. Next game, the Pacers got smacked by the Sixers, 106-89. Bojan Bogdanović had 18-5, pretty good from him, but a whole bunch of disappointing performances. Miles Turner only managed 19 games due to foul trouble, still had the three blocked, which is disappointing that he could have actually gone off a really big one. While Domantas Sabonis returned, couldn't hit any shots, 1 of 7 from the field, and a very disappointing 7 of 12 from the line. Still had 9-6-6, but the biggest relief that he's back in action. While Wes Matthews had 5 points in 39 minutes and is not a must roster. A 12-team league guy. Darren Collison struggled from the line. Normally, he's an excellent free throw shooter. 3 of 7 there. He will be better than that and remains a 12-team player. The big news from the Sixers side of things is Joel Embiid is back. 33-12 in 28 minutes. He played a little bit over what was expected of him, but you know, the usage sky high, 45% usage. The free throws, 11 of 15, are a bit disappointing, but it's positive that he'll be back. Now, he did say that he will miss some more games in the regular season to get himself right for the playoffs, and the Sixers are rightfully on playoff countdown now, but the fact that he's back and playing is positive. Toby Harris had 16-8, took him 16 shots to get there, so not overly efficient, but pretty strong. While General Saunders had 12-4-4, that's Jimmy Butler, and Benny Simmons 15-4-6. Amir Johnson getting minutes over Jonah Bolden is 100% disappointing to me. I see no need for it whatsoever. Amir Johnson shouldn't be playing. It's going to be interesting what happens when Boban returns. Does he move back into that bench role, or does Brett Brown stay with Amir? And Jimmy Ennis had those 17 minutes for 8 points, and John Simmons remains out of the rotation, which is fair enough because he is not that good. The next game, the Raptors blew out the Heat. No Kawhi Leonard. He was managing his load. Kyle Lowry had 24, 7, and 10 in 35 minutes. Strong from Lowry. Siakam also tends to go off when Kawhi is gone. 25 and 5. And Jeremy Lin had one of his best games. 11 points with 2 steals and 2 blocks. Realistically, though, he's only a deep league guy. Ibaka started over Gasol, but both players played only 22 minutes. I think we're realistically in that spot where these guys, if you're in a playoff matchup, well, you've got to consider dropping them, moving on, just depending on who you're adding and how things shake out on your roster. But this back and forward consistently, low minutes or rotating, you know, playing time and starts as they've rotated over the last 5 games is pretty hard to stomach. Patty McCaw started in place of Kawhi, hit 3 triples and had 10 points, but overall nothing to really see too much with him. The Eric Spoelstra dicking with a successful player's playing time routine is back in action. 24 minutes for Olynyk now. To be fair, he did miss all 8 of his shots, but this is the second consecutive game with lower minutes for Cali. 1 point is annoying. 5 rebounds and 4 steals is okay. He's still a hold, but if we see another game of 24 minutes in a row, not only will I curse Spoelstra, but I think we'd have to consider Olynyk as maybe expendable. Bam Adebayo was great, 19-6-5 with 2 steals. If he gets 30 minutes a night, he's a top 50 upside player, and I think that's what he will be next season. And for now, I think he does have some 12-team value. He will start the rest of the way, is my read on things. He won't be this good every night, but he can be solid enough. Well, Dion Waiters, the minutes are well down, 25 minutes, and Winslow only played 28 as well, some of that due to foul trouble. As for Hassan Whiteside, 18 minutes, 8 points and 7 rebounds for Whiteside. That really does limit his value. If you're in desperation type stakes, maybe you have to move on from him. I think I would probably be holding him because of his ability to put up big numbers in limited minutes, but it's not going to be listing him as a must roster player from now on. There's going to be a little bit of ups and downs in terms of his value. Next up game we look at is the Orlando Magic disappointingly losing to the Grizzlies, 105-97. Nikola Vucevic had 26-10, while Terry Ross was great, 15-5, 3 threes, 2 steals and 2 blocks. That defensive stuff, especially the blocks from Ross, is not an expectation we have for him, but he routinely puts up big numbers and then will turn in an absolute turd one every 4 or 5 games, but otherwise you just stick with him. Jaren Grant getting those backup point guard minutes with Isaiah Briscoe hurt, 9 points with 3 threes. He's still just a deeper league guy, while Aaron Gordon had a rib injury. 13 points on 17 shots is horrible, but 7 rebounds and 6 assists sort of helps. Let's wait to see if anything does happen with this rib. While Fournier got ejected after only 14 minutes, meaning Wesawundu played 32 minutes and didn't do a huge amount in that time. For the Grizz, Valanciunas got into some foul trouble. 12-8 with a steal and four blocks in 25 minutes does it for me, though, while Mickey Conley has been unbelievable. 26-5-8, and Avery Bradley's strong run continues. 21-3 threes, three assists, two steals. The usage still remains too high. The minutes are too high for Bradley, but while the Grizzlies are winning and while JB Bickerstaff is the coach, it looks like he's going to get these minutes. So he is a 12-team league player. CJ Miles chimed in for three triples, realistically just a streamer for, say, 14 to 16 teamers, while Justin Holiday continues to be trash. If the Ivica-Zubats trade didn't exist, the Memphis trade for Justin Holiday would be the worst of the season. 6 points in 21 minutes, a pretty clear drop in nearly all formats, while Joakim Noah was 10-6 in his 23 minutes. He's more of a streamer and 14-team league player. While the development of Ivan Rabb has clearly been discarded, he played 7 minutes, barely saw the court, despite being the guy that JB said will be starting for the foreseeable future, which lasted about 2 games. Next game, the Pelicans and the Hawks. Big win for Atlanta, 128-116. Tone Davis played 21 minutes on the nose again, 15-8-4 with a steal and four blocks, continues to put up good lines, and you just hanker for the 35 minutes of yore, but that's not going to be happening. Lord Alfred Payton had his March triple-double, 15-10-10 in 31 minutes and is a must-roster player, while Frankie Jackson, 23 points, 3 triples, 6 rebounds and 2 assists, 56% shooting is not his bag. The 3 triples are nice, the 23 points are nice, he's an interesting streamer. If you've got a Tim Hardaway, for example, yeah, I'd move on from Hardaway and add Jackson, but if Holiday comes back, it's going to impact Frank, and he just has some issues in other areas. Like, didn't get to the line once in this game, and that means that when the shot doesn't fall, then it's an absolute disaster of a line for Frank, but still has some value. Kendrick Williams stuffed the stat sheet, 9-2-1-1-2, so filling it up right across the board, and Cheick Diallo and Jahlil Okafor were disastrous. No need to be rostering any of those guys. They are stream options when Davis sits. Diallo more so than Okafor. Well, Darius Bertans made his NBA debut and had an assist. Cool for him. For the Hawks, Johnny Collins. Remember when he just couldn't block any shots? Well, he had 4 here. 23-10 with 2 triples. And Kevin Huerter, my man, Fanta Pants, 27 points with 4 triples in 30 minutes. I've been disappointed with how low his minutes have been, but this was encouraging. 61% from the field won't stick. And at this point, I look at him as a 14 to 16 team guy who is probably going to be a 12-team player next season, but that could even change this year. Bazemore had 13-7-5, still in limited minutes, while Len started over Dedmon, who was on a limit. Alex Len had 19-9, and The Undertaker had 8-6 with 2 steals. I would still have Dedmon over Len, but with the absences of the other big men, Alex could remain a 12-team league guy, probably more of a 14-teamer. While the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince had 13-4-5, and Trae Young, 10 points on 14% shooting, but at least he had the 10 assists. But that field goal percentage is pretty disastrous there from Trae Young. Next up, the Rockets get away with a victory over the Mavericks, 94-93. Chris Paul, 33 minutes in the first game of a back-to-back, only 9 points on 18% shooting, but 9 assists, and he also had a Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
Love getting 2 blocks out of Chris Paul. Eric Gordon's hot streak continues, 26 points on 20 shots with 5 threes, nothing else, and when the shots don't fall, he gives you jack shit, but for now, he's a points and threes type of a guy, while Clinty Capela had 17-12, good stuff from him, and Jimmy Harden, 20 points, not so good stuff, 25 shots, and that's a 28% mark for Jim, whose wrist appears to be bothering him. For the Mavericks, Dwight Powell, only the 26 minutes here, 9-6, but still had a triple one and is still a must-roster 12-team league guy, while Maxi Kleber definitely piqued our interest. 31 minutes, 10-11 with a steal and 3 blocks. It's the 31 minutes that really gets me erect, and I don't know whether that will stick, but we have to look that Dirk only played 7 minutes. So if Dirk's minutes come back up, Maxi's might be reduced. Timmy Hardaway had 9 points on 11 shots. I think he's a pretty clear drop in 10 and 12 team formats. While Dorian Finney-Smith had 4 points in his 30 minutes. Really just a deep, deep, deep league guy. The Knicks and the Wolves. The Wolves win 103-92. Shout out to Professor Data, who played 33 minutes for Mitchell Robinson, 8-10 with a steal and five blocks, even had 5 fouls. Robinson, I don't care that DeAndre Jordan is back, he is a must roster player, and this minutes distribution is something Fizdale should be doing more often. I don't know that he will, but 15 minutes for DeAndre Jordan is encouraging for a Robinson perspective and for a development perspective. Do you drop Jordan? Yeah, only 3 games this week, and if he's only going to play 50 minutes combined, pretty hard to hold on to him, but he's not a must-drop sort of a guy because we know the volatility in what Fizdale does remains out there. Henry Allenson and Luke Kornet, both DMPCDs, so that we could get 28 minutes of Noah Vonleh and, of course, 13 minutes of Lance Thomas, while Alonso Trier had 15 points in his 24 minutes, more of a deeper league guy. It was also the Fort Kevin Knox, one of his better games, 13, 5, and 4, but only a points league guy and only a deeper league points league guy at that. Taj Gibson had 25 and 8 with 2 steals and a block in a spot start for Towns. As long as Towns is out, Gibson's going to be a 12-team guy, while Gorgie Jeng moved into the backup role and played 18 minutes and had a steal and a block. We love what Jeng does. If he gets 26 minutes, he's not getting 26 minutes, so he is just a short-term deep league guy. Only 8 minutes for Derek Rose. It was on a back-to-back. He wasn't really feeling it. That ankle is still clearly bothering him. I don't think that he remains a must-roster 12-team league player. While Jeff Teague had a strong game.
My name is Jeff.
23 and 10 with a steal and 2 blocks, and we talked about Bates Diop already. Šarić, 11 and 4 in 21 minutes, just continues to be a massive, massive disappointment. The Milwaukee Bucks lose to the Spurs 114-121. Yanni had 27-13-6, and the free throws were bad. 6 of 10. He'd been putting up some big volume and big percentages. Disappointing in this one from Antetokounmpo, and 25% from 3 is not ideal, but still pretty good. While Paddy Connaughton got hot, hit all 5 of his shots, which resulted in 14 points and 4 triples. Of course, he won't do that every game and remains just a deeper league guy who'll probably be out of the rotation when Sterling Brown and George Hill return. Pau Gasol got the minutes over Ersan Ilyasova, who was a DMP CD rest. Gasol had 3 points in 15 minutes, while Nikola Mirotic had 10 and 4 in his 22 minutes. I love Mirotic, but if you need to make a move, if you need to stream, I think with how he is playing and the role that he is in, I think he's got to be considered expendable. Bledsoe had 21-2-6 on 69% shooting.
Giggity!
Only 1 of 3 from the line, but otherwise pretty strong. For the Spurs, Derek White was poor, 7-3-4. I am still clearly holding him. Aldridge was great, 29-15, 2 steals and 2 blocks, and he hit a 3. And DeRozan had 28-4-6. While Patty Mills and Marco Bellinelli, when the Spurs were rolling, these guys were banging in, you know, 8 to 10 threes a game, and they combined for 8 here, both had 16 points. With Rudy Gay out, Jakob Poeltl started, had 8-8 with 4-4 from the field. Didn't block a shot, but he's realistically just a rebound, field goal percentage, blocks streamer. No idea whether he will start or not, but can have some 14-team league value. And then the last game of the night was the Phoenix Suns and the Golden State Warriors. Oubre was big again, 22-5 in 33 minutes, remains a must-roster player, while McCall Bridges just did what he needs to do. 10 points, 2 triples, 3 steals. I want him to get 32, 33 minutes a night, and it's confusing that he doesn't. For now, he's a specialist, he's a 14-team league guy, and a 12-team streamer. Ayton had 18-9, while Josh Jackson continues to be poor, 7-8 in 21 minutes, and I don't ever think he's going to be a good NBA player, as you're well aware. It was a bad Tyler Johnson night, which they come relatively regularly. 10 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, still probably remains a 12-team league guy, but he's going to be up and down with his inconsistency. While for the Warriors, Durant hurt that ankle before, that was after he scored 25 points. Draymond had 6-11-8. Curry had 18-7-8 on a poor shooting night. And Thompson, 28-5-5. So more of the same. Boogie continues to struggle on court. The production's okay. 13-5 in 28 minutes. But you think if the Warriors are going to be winning championships, they're 4-6 in their last 10 games, and that's a lot of that's Cousins. There might be times in the playoffs that Cousins has to be sat, not started, played limited minutes, and we'll see if that has any impact. It's a very, very volatile situation, I believe. He is not meshing well with this team on court, especially defensively, and it's going to be interesting to see exactly how that goes down. As per usual, the Warriors bench provided absolutely nothing in terms of fantasy value. Hi guys, let's take a look now at the week coming up for the NBA for fantasy basketball. It's week 22 in the league. Fantasy playoffs starting in a lot of default leagues. It should have started in last week or the week before in most other leagues, but I know that most default leagues do start this week. So we're going to be looking at this week ahead, trying to work out where the schedule lies, how the schedule best can be manipulated, and some streaming options as well for all of the specific categories. Let's have a look first of all at the team who has the best schedule for this upcoming week. The best team this week is the Houston Rockets. They're one of a handful of teams that play 4 games. They've got good quality opponents to go up against the Hornets, which have been a boon recently, especially for big men. They play the Warriors, they play the Suns, and they play the Timberwolves. So they have a significantly easier schedule than the majority of teams that play 4 games this week. On the flip side, the Warriors have the worst schedule, only 2 games, one of 2 teams that play 2 games, them and the Memphis Grizzlies. Grizzlies, and they take on the Rockets, who are quite negative in terms of fantasy production against, and they play the Thunder on the weekend as well. So, yeah, you don't get much streaming value out of Warriors guys anyway, but this week it's going to be even more muted as their opponents or the strength of their schedule is not working in our favor from a fantasy point of view. It's not going to do a huge amount to those guys like Steph and Clay and KD. But maybe even a guy like Clay or a guy like Draymond, they might not be guys that you lock into weekly lineups for this week. Steph and KD, yes. Clay and Boogie, probably. But they're in a 10-team format, they're probably on the borderline given just the two games for this squad for this upcoming week. Let's look at the rest of the week. This is a weird one for the week where you can stream every day. There are 6 games Monday, 7 Tuesday, 6 Wednesday, 6 Thursday, 8 Friday, 8 Saturday, 8 Sunday. So literally streaming every day, meaning using your acquisitions, using your waiver moves judiciously is all the more important. You're unlikely to have 7 moves this week, and if you do, good luck to you. That means you can stream every day. You've probably got 4 or 5 moves this week. So taking advantage of the back-to-backs and getting 2-for-1s and making the moves count is going to be really, really key this week, because any time that you add someone, you are likely, almost 100%, going to be able to add that guy to your active roster. It's not going to be a scenario of I add him and I don't know whether I can play him. You are going to be able to stream every single day. So taking full advantage of that is going to be really, really key. So let's look at where the back-to-backs lie. On Monday, Tuesday, the Clippers have a back-to-back and the Cavs have a back-to-back. So if you're looking to get 2 games for 1 acquisition, you look to add players from those teams. Is it Jordan Clarkson of the Cavs? Is it Larry Nance? Is it Ante Zizic? Is it Brandon Knight, who played well in the Cavs last game? For the Clippers, who are you looking at there? Is it Landry Shamet? You could get 6 triples out of these 2 games from him. Is it Patrick Beverley? You probably want to have him regardless, and the Clippers do have 4 games this week. But if you're just looking at streaming, they're the guys that you want to look at. Now, unfortunately, for Tuesday, Wednesday, we don't have any teams that have got a back-to-back, so you can't make use of that. But as I said, most teams will have a 4 or 5 acquisition limit, so you can skip that necessarily, and then you want to focus on the Wednesday, Thursday, the Thursday, Fridays, the Friday, Saturdays, and try and get those 2 games for the price of 1. On the Wednesday, Thursday back-to-back, we've got the Utah Jazz, who have got that back-to-back. You've got the Thunder, and you've got the Orlando Magic. So 3 teams there. Terrence Ross, the number 1 guy that stands out. You could look at Terry Ferguson for the Thunder as well. Maybe Abdul Nadir in deeper formats, getting some extra run there. Markieff Morris, Nerlens Noel could have significant appeal for the Jazz. Derek Favors is probably a must roster anyway, but he gets a bit of a boost in value with that back-to-back, especially considering it comes against the Suns and the Timberwolves. Some really good opposition for him to go up against. Jay Crowder would also look pretty good there. Even Royce O'Neal, if Rubio is out, and we don't know that's going to be the case when it comes to Wednesday. The Thursday, Friday back-to-backs, you've got the Lakers, you've got the Kings, who have got that back-to-back as well. So those 2 teams there are teams that we can look at. The Lakers, Josh the Hitman Hart. We could even look at someone like Flaming Mo Wagner. You could maybe deeper leagues look at John Williams, JaVale McGee, Reggie Bullock. They're the sort of players we're looking to target in streaming. For the Kings, it's Nemanja Bjelica, who's really seen his production rise with the absence of Marvin Bagley. You could stream Harry Giles, Bogdan Bogdanovic, who probably is a must roster anyway, but he could jump in there. Deeper leagues for steals, you look at Corey Brewer as another option as well. On Friday and Saturday, we've got the Portland Trailblazers, who have that back-to-back. The New Orleans Pelicans, Anthony Davis is going to sit one of those games. You've got the Spurs, who have got that back-to-back, and the Phoenix Suns, who have also got that Friday, Saturday back-to-back. Oh, the Washington Wizards, sorry, they also have that back-to-back. So for the Wizards, you're looking for maybe a Troy Brown in a deeper format. You're looking at Satoransky, who's a must-roster guy regardless. Maybe you could get some short-term use out of Thomas Bryant in that situation. For the Blazers, we're looking at you're looking at guys like Al-Farouq Aminu, Mo Harkless, Enes Kanter as a stream option on that back-to-back. For the Pelicans, Cheick Diallo is going to have at least 1 really big game. Kenrick Williams, Frank Jackson, perfect opportunity to stream those guys. And then for the Spurs, you could get Davis Bertans, you could get Jakob Poeltl into the mix, Patty Mills, Bryn Forbes if you're looking for 3-pointers. And the Phoenix Suns, McCall Bridges, Josh Jackson, they're probably the 2 names that really stand out. Tyler Johnson, although he probably is close to a must-roster guy at this point. And then to end the week, we only have one back-to-back, and that back-to-back is the Atlanta Hawks. They end with the Celtics and the Magic, so two relatively negative matchups for those guys, but at least they do have that back-to-back. DeAndre Bembry, maybe Kent Bazemore you look at there. Alex Len is going to have some value with The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman likely back. He's going to be a player who could be available anyway, but you should be rostering him regardless. But value from those guys across the back-to-back. The majority of teams do play three games this week, and as I said, every game for this week is a quality game. The next thing we're going to look at is we look at normally players to add for the week. I'm looking at players to stream for different categories. So if I'm looking for points for this week, Colin Sexton, Luke Kennard, and Landry Shamet are probably the guys that stand out. Now they're going to have their negatives, of course. Sexton is providing no value in any other category. There's a sneeze for you. Your Kennard's probably closer to a must-roster guy. He's helping in points. He gets some assists. He gets some threes there. And Shamet, of course, that really three-point specialist. And then if we're looking to stream in threes for the week, Shamet, an excellent option. We talked about that with the Clippers early back-to-back. Kyle Korver for the Jazz, another one who's got a midweek back-to-back, who is getting a ton more minutes, a lot more shots, and banging in a lot of threes. While the Duke, Wayne Ellington, another three-point option, does absolutely nothing apart from hit those threes. But for his games this week, four games this week, he could very realistically get you 10 triples. Four rebounds, Ivica Zubac is probably the number one stream guy you look at to get those boards. Noah Vonleh, assuming he's back from his illness, and Eddie Davis, the best rebound specialist in the league. For assists, we're looking at Ish Smith, who's been playing really well for the Pistons in recent times. Matty Dellavedova, assuming he's back from his injury. And DJ Augustin, some really strong assist streamers for this week. For steals, PJ Tucker, probably the guy that stands out. Marcus Smart, who's a must-roster guy, but still available in over 50% of leagues. And Patty Beverley, similarly, a must-roster guy who's available in lots of different scenarios. For blocks, we're looking at Robin Lopez, again, a must-roster player who's available in lots of spots. Ivica Zubac and Nerlens Noel with that back-to-back for the Thunder in the middle of the week as well. Guys that can come in and play those games, four games for Noel. Like, there's a chance he gets you six blocks in that time and maybe even more. For field goal percentage, we're looking at field goal percentage plus volume. Thomas Bryant, with Dwight Howard unlikely to return this week. His minutes aren't going to be high, but he can be a real influencer in that category. Jakob Poeltl and Ivica Zubac are the three best field goal percentage guys who are likely available on your waiver wire. And for free throw percentage, we're looking at Jeff Green, who is remaining the starter and playing lots of minutes. Marco Bellinelli, who's got a very, very good free throw percentage. And Isaiah Thomas, for as poor as he's been this season, he's still getting to the line and he's still hitting them at a very high rate. And then, of course, I'm taking the piss when I list turnovers there by saying you could add Brandon Ingram, Kristaps Porzingis, or Markel Fultz, because, of course, they won't be playing at all for the rest of this season. So that's some options there of players to stream, four categories, and that's really what you've got to be focusing on. You're maximizing your waiver wire use in the playoffs, getting the categories that you need to strengthen your team against your particular opponent as well. That's the key to fantasy success in the head-to-head playoffs. I wish all of you guys good luck in your head-to-head leagues and, of course, in your roto leagues, strengthening your position as the season does begin to come to a close. All right, let's go on to some DFS action now. Looking across the DFS stuff, let's look at... That was poorly worded for me. Let's look at the perfect lineup on DraftKings. Doncic, Booker, Dotson, Taj, LaMarcus, Payton, Herder, and Jeff Teague for a total of 412.25. And then on FanDuel, you've got Payton, Teague, Dotson, Booker, Antetokounmpo, Bates, Diop, Aldridge, Gibson, and Looney for a total of 401.3. And that costs the full $60,000 dues. All right, let's talk some DFS. Looking at Monday, there are six games on Monday. We're going to be focusing mainly on FanDuel pricing for today's show. The first game we look at, the Raptors on a back-to-back traveling to Cleveland to take on the Cavaliers. The total is a very nice Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
And the Raptors are 10.5-point favorites. Kawhi Leonard sat out Sunday's game. I'm not sure if they're going to manage his load again on this one. I would assume that he is back, not that he's really going to be necessary to take on the Cavs. While Kyle Lowry, there was some thought that he may be perhaps be out on Monday, but the plan at this point is for him to play in this game on Monday as well. For the Cavs, a bunch of guys out. Larry Nance Jr., Tristan Thompson, and Matty Dellavedova are all out for Cleveland. So a bit of value opening up there. At point guard, we do have the Padawan Colin Sexton at 5,400, who's been putting together some nice DFS-type performances. 29 points last game, 5,400. I think it does... He can get to that number. He's more of a tournament guy, but I'm not sure his upside is really high enough, and I'm damn sure his floor is pretty low. So he's not a guy that I think is a high priority player. While Lowry dropped 41 today against the Heat, he's at 8,500. It's an easier matchup here for Kyle, but I do think the minutes might be pushed back a little bit. So probably a guy that I'd want to fade off. While Jeremy Lin at 3,600, he had 27 points against the Heat in one of his stronger games, an opportunity for perhaps more minutes if Lowry does see his minutes reduced somewhat. I think Lin is an interesting GPP guy. Brandon Knight, also last game with Dellavedova Dover out, had 29 points in 26 minutes. He's a minimum salary player, so he absolutely should be in the tournament discussion. Dan Green's at 45. I'm not really interested in him. David Nwaba at 37. He's an up and down sort of guy, while 5,200 for Jordy Clarkson. A real negative matchup here for Clarko, but I think that he is that 40-point upside player as a GPP guy, but that's really about it. Paddy McCaw started today's game at minimum salary, but if Kawhi is back as expected, he won't get anywhere near that same level of run. For the small forwards, the fun guy.
I'm a fun guy.
Kawhi Leonard is at 9,800. You'd think that he could approach 50 here. The worry you have is perhaps the minutes are a little bit reduced, so I wouldn't feel super confident with him, while Chetty Osman is in a massive slump, and the salary hasn't reduced enough for me to get interested. 5,800 here for Chetty in a really negative matchup. The Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
With Leonard likely returning, he's unlikely to get the 25-26 minutes that he would need to be a valuable player. But where things really open up for Cleveland is the front court. Marquise Chris, a minimum salary player. We've got Nance and Thompson out, so Chris is going to get extended run. So I like him quite a bit, and that's not something I say very often for Marquise Chris. So he's an option. Siakam at 77 is a strong cash option, while Kevin Love, the other, or one of the three KLs in this game, 8,600 for Lovey. A good opportunity for him to have a 40-pointer. I wouldn't say that he is a cash lock, maybe some tournament value, but not the best play out there. Serge Ibaka at 6,400, it's just too high of a price for a situation where the minutes are unknown. Ante Zizic, though, at 3,600, much like Marquise Chris, they're going to get as many minutes as they can handle. Both of those guys should go for 20-plus, which at those really, really low salary prices makes them strong plays. While Gasol at 6,000, much like Ibaka, almost impossible to trust. Now, I think that Gasol will get the bulk of the minutes if we see Zizic starting for Cleveland. If it's Chris starting, we maybe see more Ibaka, and that's going to be a tough matchup to work out. Gasol would be the one that I'd look at out of him and Ibaka as a GPP guy, because he does come in as a cheaper price player over on FanDuel. Let's look at it on DraftKings. Chris and Zizic, again, really good options there. Love, I think, is a stronger play on DraftKings at 7,700. I like Sexton quite a bit at 4,700, and Siakam at 72, and Gasol all the way down at 5,400.
Oh, hi, Mark.
That makes him an interesting guy, but again, still more just for tournaments, and same with Kyle Lowry at 7,600. Let's go on to the next game. We've got the Sacramento Kings and the Washington Wizards. The Wizards are actually 2-point favorites in this game. The total is a huge 241.5, the largest total of the day, and a real opportunity for some big fantasy performances in this matchup. Injury-wise, Marvin Bagley is out of this one. At point guard, De'Aaron Fox at $8,000. He's been struggling at times recently, probably a bit under that 40-point mark that we want him at. The high total in this game makes him appealing, but the Wizards have been pretty good at reducing opposition point guard output, so I wouldn't look at him as a must-roster guy. While Tomas Satoransky at 6,300, a strong floor, 30-point type of a guy, and the matchup does suit him. Bogdan Bogdanovic at 5,900 has been definitely under recent levels of production. I think that could be an opportunity to use him with low roster percentage across the slate, so this is a good option, I think, for him. While Beal at 10,800, love what Beal is doing, 50 points almost every single night. And Budrick Hield at 7,400. His last game was a bit of a disappointment, but I do look for him to get back on track. I just don't think that he is in the best of situations. One guy we have to look at as a small forward is Nemanja Bjelica. He's at 4,600. He had 40 points last game. He has torn up the Wizards the last three times he's played them. At 40 points, in 29 minutes last game. It's the minutes that are interesting to me with Bagley out. They've continued to go up, and he's getting back to that early season level of form. Jabari Parker at 58 has been remarkably consistent. I worry that this really high shooting percentage streak that he's having is going to come to an end, and then he's going to fart all over your lineup in that case. So I'd look at him more as a tournament guy. Well, Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
He's at 4,700. Strong performance from him last time. I wouldn't put full trust in that moving forward. Troy Brown, the pencil Harrison Barnes. I don't like Barnes' salary at 61, although he does play well against Washington. At power forward, Harry Giles at 4,500, really just for tournaments. The minutes aren't there. While Punch Bob at 6,500, Bobby Portis, he's a 30-point-a-night guy at the moment, whose matchup is relatively neutral, but I think he's okay on a day where maybe there's not as many good options as what we would hope. Will Cauley-Stein at 5,900, I think that's more of a tournament matchup, but we know centers have been putting up big numbers against Washington. When you've got a matchup against Portis, the defensive resistance isn't as high as it would be against other centers. So Cauley-Stein is in play. Well, Tom Bryant at 4,000, pretty hard to get excited about him with how he's been used by Scotty Brooks. I like a lot of guys here on DraftKings. Bielitsa, Barnes, Parker, Satoransky, Portis, Beal, all of those guys have appeal across both formats of DFS. Bogdanovic at 5,500 as well, really an interesting GPP guy whose roster percentage should be pretty low. And 7,300 for De'Aaron Fox absolutely gets him into my player pool over on the old DraftKings. Next up, the Pistons and the Nets. The Pistons on a back-to-back. The Nets are 2.5-point favorites. The total, 221. These teams battling to keep themselves right in that lower seed mix in the Eastern Conference. The Shark, Bruce Brown. Baby Shark, he missed Sunday's game. Zaza Pachulia, he and Brown are both probable, so that's going to reduce the impact of someone like Langston Galloway, who saw extra minutes in Sunday's action. At point guard, Reggie Jackson's at 53. Now, only 25 minutes for him in the blowout over the Bulls, but the production was nice. We know that point guards against the Nets go off. His minutes have dropped down here, Reggie, but I still think that he is worth a look, especially for tournaments. While Spencer Dinwiddie really, really crushing it against his former team here, of course. 7,400 for Spence. I think a 30-point floor is a relatively realistic expectation, which makes him pretty good for cash. At shooting guard, the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, is always just a tournament guy. Well, D'Angelo Russell has come down to a more acceptable 8,600. Still not quite at that level, and I would end up fading him. Caris LeVert's a pretty strong fade as well. Galloway, 3,500 minimum salary guy, and you look at what he did on Sunday, 24 points. That's excellent, but it took 29 minutes, and with Brown likely to return on Monday, I don't think Galloway gets that. We know he is also one of the most hot and cold players in the NBA.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
At small forward, Smokin' Joe Harris at 4,500. I'm not really feeling that. Damari Carroll, similarly, I think they're probably $500 too overpriced. And at power forward, you've got Blakey Griffin at 83. We love big men against the Nets. Griffin's a big man, and he's playing the Nets. So I'm really, really into him, especially at that salary. While Rowdy Rodion's Kurucs, the salary is up to $5,000. Now, he's been getting 25+, which for $5,000 is really strong. I don't super trust it here, especially in a negative matchup for Kurucs. I think that he could be a tournament guy, but even then, I'm not super sold on his ceiling. I like Jared Allen, whose minutes and production have gone way up, 6,500, interested in him. Well, Drummond, the matchup's great for Drummo. He averages 46 against the Nets. The price for him is pretty high, 10,600, and I'm not super into him outside of tournaments. Over on DraftKings, Allen is almost a must-play guy at 4,800, Jared Allen. Drummond at 91, super strong. Griffo at 83, and even D'Angelo at 8,000 I like. I love Spencer Dinwiddie at 6,000 as well on DraftKings. Tons of value there in him. The next game up is the Charlotte Hornets and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets on a back-to-back. They are 9-point favorites in the total, 225.5. Chris Paul will play in this back-to-back. Well, that's the latest news there. Nene will not, while Kenneth Faried will return. We know that big men go off against Charlotte. They've been one of the most tasty matchups in DFS over the last month or so. At point guard, you got Kemba at 8,800. Pretty decent record against the Rockets. I don't super love him as a upside tournament guy, but there is some cash value. I think there are better plays on the board. While Chris Paul at 8,900, really, really dislike that on a back-to-back, even though he will play. At shooting guard, Jeremy Lamb against his former team, 6,500. He's been around a 30-point guy most of the last couple of weeks. And at 6,500, I think there is good cash value in him. Eric Gordon, don't super trust that. Well, Jimmy Harden at 12,400, I think that's too high for Harden, dealing with that wrist issue that he is. Batum's at 6,100 as a small forward. I love his cash floor. You know, 28, 29 almost every night. His tournament value is pretty limited, but for cash, I don't mind Batum. While Miles Bridges put up a strong performance for Charlotte last game, but realistically, that is a once in a blue moon situation, and it's not high enough to consider too much of a tournament play. Power forward Marvin Williams at 5,300. I don't super love that. While Kenny Faried at 55, I just don't think the minutes will quite be there. Frank the Tank Kaminsky is the interesting one. 4,500. He had 23 points. Now, he's a better option in a category league rather than a DFS type scenario because he just doesn't do anything in these other areas. He can be streamed in those category leagues for points. But for DFS, he's getting you, yeah, whatever he scores is basically all he's giving you. 23 points last game in 21 minutes, which at 4,500, I'm not sure that really pays the bills. Love Capella. Yes, he's at 8,000, but we've seen centers annihilate Charlotte all season, and especially over the last month or so. At 8,000, we should be looking at a 40-point situation for Capella, maybe pushing to 50. Well, Cody Zeller at 5,400. Yeah, don't like what's been happening with him lately. He'd be a pretty interesting fade, I think. On DraftKings, love Capella as well. Lamb at 58 is strong. Chrissy Paul at 71, maybe into a GPP, only because that price is so low there for Paul Waller. Kemba at 81 comes in a lot stronger as well. The next game up on the slate, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Utah Jazz. The Jazz are 3.5-point favorites. The total is 227.5. Ravishing Rick Rubio is out. But Dante Exum is probable. Epe Udo is also probable. I don't think Exum's coming in and starting in his first game back, but it's good to see that he'll be available. Russell Westbrook, 11,300. I really like this for Russ. Yes, the Jazz have got a pretty good defense against point guards, but Westbrook averages 52 against them. Like the floor value for him in cash and tournaments, of course. While at shooting guard, Donovan Mitchell, 8,900.
He's done. He's good.
He should start again at point guard. That should give you 40-plus points here. Really like Mitchell in this one. Dennis Schroeder at 53, only for tournaments, while Kyle Korver at 4,500. With Rubio out, he's been putting up some really, really good numbers. Not sure the upside's really high enough, though, for Korver. More of a season-long league type of streamer. Royce O'Neal, minimum salary. He had 18 points last game. The minutes should be up. I like the matchup for Royce. More tournament than cash, but you could use him in that FanDuel drop the lower score type of scenario. Paulie George at 10-6, really like that. He's been off. The shot hasn't been falling, and he fouled out in 28 minutes last game, so that skews his recent averages. But a 50-point performance wouldn't be too much of a surprise. In fact, he averages 67 points the last three times against Utah. Ingles at 6,400. He's been good for 30 a night, at least 33 average over the last five. At 6,400, though, I'm not super into it. At power forward, Jeremy Grant, yeah. Hate the matchup. Derek Favors, 6,500, too high of a price. And then at center, you got Steve Adams at 7,000, who does well against Gobert, averages 37.5 the last three times out. We know centers against Gobert have put up good numbers all season, so I like him there. Noel at minimum salary, probably not. While Gobert at 9,500, that's pushing a little bit too high, I think, for Rudy. At 9,000, I'd be more into it. At 95, I think it's a little bit too high to use Gobert. On DraftKings, Adams I love at 61. Paul George comes in strong. I like Westbrook and Mitchell. Korver at 39 and O'Neal at 37 also have quite a bit of value in this matchup over on DraftKings. The last game of the night is the Celtics, and they are traveling to take on the Clippers. The Celtics are 1.5-point favorites in this one. Boston's been figuring it out of late, but they do have Jason Tatum, who is questionable in this one with shoulder soreness, a late addition to the injury report here. At point guard, you've got Kyrie at 9,800, a great matchup for Kyrie. I really like him in GPPs and cash here, while Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's been playing well, and he had 30 earlier in the season against the Celtics. I think I'd end up fading him here in a negative matchup. While Landry Shamet at 4,300, much like when talking about Frank Kaminsky, he does certain things well, but just doesn't do anything in those other areas to boost his overall value. So I don't really think there's good value in him. 6,200 for Patty Beverley is probably too high for me as well. At shooting guard, Jaylen Brown's at 46. I would love that if Tatum happens to be out, which is a possibility now. So that would really open things up for Jaylen at that salary. Well, Marcus Smart at 56 has been rock solid. 28 a night. Like it for cash, maybe not so much for tournaments, when Lou Williams at 73, absolutely adore that for both formats of the game. on small at small forward, sorry, Gordy Haywood at 47. I'd be really into Gordo if Jason Tatum is out. I think he would become an interesting or a really good cash option. While the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, has been really strong for cash. Love his floor value. He's got some upside as well for tournaments, but really love his floor. Tatum at 63, I'll fade him. Marcus Morris at 51. He's been getting a lot of shots and had 30 points in 27 minutes last game. That would give him a level of appeal, but I'm still not super confident in him. While the table, Montrezl Harrell, don't like the matchup. Jermichael Green, not enough minutes. Love Al Horford here. If there's one team that's good, that's not the Charlottes to go up against as a center, it's the Clippers. 7,100 for Horf. Love, love, love this matchup for him. Zubats at 5,400. I think, you know, really good last game in a blowout type scenario, but that's too high at 5,400. While Bainesy at minimum salary, he is minimum salary for a very, very specific reason. On DraftKings, I love Horf. I love Irving over here. Lou Williams at 68 is absolutely fantastic despite the negative matchup. Marcus Smart at 51, also pretty good. And Gilgeous Alexander, I think he's in play on DraftKings at 3,900. Is a really nice price tag for him. Let's go through some studs and values now. On DraftKings, I love Beal as a stud, and a value play is Bielitsa. And on FanDuel, my stud is Clinty Capella against those Hornets, and my value play is Ante Zizic. That'll do it for another episode of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast. But while you're in the car, tell your smart device to play your favorite Locked On podcast. Just say, hey, play the podcast Locked On and insert the team name there. You want to hear more about the Celtics, and you listen to John and Jay and Sam. Hey, play Locked On Celtics. Go and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and if you can leave a 5-star rating, if it's helped you at all during the season, that would be a great way of helping me in return. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Darius Thornwell.